The following presentation is brought to you by The Realm Network.
Wow, oh wow, Goldie's Closet, episode 58. Welcome, Brand Land, Brand Family, Russo Family Brand. It's your girl, Goldie, and we've got a guest for you today that you are going to guarantee love. Dr. Brooke Fott, she's actually a nurse practitioner and a doctor of nursing. Let's give her a warm welcome. Put your hands together right now. Dr. Brooke Fott. You look absolutely beautiful, and you have all of your qualifications behind you. I love it.
Actually, those are my husband's. I'm in his office today.
I'll take it. I did our live intro a few minutes ago. We've been live for a little bit, So I've got all of that. But we always start out with put your hands together for our guests. So I introduced you, and I got your name, your pronunciation correctly. It is Fott. Dr. Brooke Fott, and you said that you are a nurse practitioner, and then you are a doctor of nursing.
Yep, that's correct.
This is all news to me, and ladies and gentlemen, brand members, I want to take you back to, real quickly, how amazing it is in the world, because it's so easy right now, Brooke, do I call you Dr. Fott or call you Dr. Fott?
You will call me Dr. Fott the entire time.
We'll call you Dr. Fott. It's so easy right now to fall down the rabbit hole of depressing things and negative things and dark things. And that's why we always have to do this show and just pump it up to the light. And a great story about how I met you is I'm going to take everybody back to, me hearing a bunch of haters online saying how old and ugly I look, reaching out, looking for something on Craigslist to find some affordable Botox. I find Bellevue Medispa. I get to meet the owners of that Medispa. I meet Susie, another nurse practitioner. You know, when you're getting your face injected and you're getting your Botox put in, your fillers, all of that, it is a very intimate experience. And you, especially somebody as beautiful as you or as Susie, you opened up to people. And I'll be very transparent with everyone and just say, sex has hurt me pretty much my whole life so that it's not even pleasurable. And I've been just faking it till I make it for all these years. And Susie just like is a strong, caring, wonderful woman and says, oh, no, it's not supposed to be like. And then puts me in touch with some people, and it leads to you at a very crazy sexual wellness and health expo that I met you at. And Susie just wanted me to meet you and possibly be on the podcast. And then, oh my God, you blew my mind and just opened me up to all of these things. And even since we've met, I've had some procedures done to rectify, to help heal and fix, a lifelong ongoing problem. So that's everybody, the beautiful way that you can just, if you put yourself out there to meet people and you keep an open mind and you are transparent, you tell your story, you tell what you want and what you need, the right people will show up. So tell us what exactly do you do, because you are an expert in sexual wellness and pelvic health. Yeah. I mean, I didn't even know what this was until I researched you. Tell us a little bit about what you do, because it's exciting, mm-hmm. not only for the women out there to know are out there, your services are available, but I really want, since there's so many men that listen and watch this podcast, we want to shed light on some things for you so that you can understand what the lady in your life is going through more and be more connected and get some more whoopee.
Yeah. No, well, thank you, first of all, for having me on, because I think that this is a very, very important topic, hence why I've devoted my entire career to this. So my background is I'm a women's health nurse practitioner. And when I first began working as a nurse practitioner, I first worked in reproductive endocrinology, otherwise known as infertility.
And oh, okay.
A lot of patients that went through fertility treatments simply because they had sexual pain. That was their main concern or their main complaint. And I remember thinking, geez, I wonder if we can better tackle this. Could we possibly treat their pain versus just having them go through these really invasive fertility treatments? And that reminded me that when I was in training, out in Philadelphia, just a few years ago, I recall being exposed to a sex medicine practice. And at the time, I think there were only two or three in the nation. And I kind of put my brain together with a couple of colleagues and found out that my current practice, Urology Associates, was looking to expand women's services. Because if you think about urology, you know, when men have erectile dysfunction, men have premature ejaculation, kidney stuff, anything related to their down there region, you know, they think about the urologist. Well, women have bladders, women have sexual needs, women have all of these pelvic floor components as well. And nobody was really addressing this appropriately. We think about going to the gynecologist, but unfortunately, pretty much including myself, none of us were trained in sex medicine during either medical training or whether you're a nurse practitioner, a physician, a physician assistant. It's just not included in our medical training and the content that we learn. And so I kind of took it upon myself, went back and did a traineeship with a sex medicine provider out in Philadelphia. Little shout out to Susan Kellogg out there in Philadelphia, and brought that information back and started a practice called the Women's Institute for Sexual Health in Nashville here. It's also called WISH, just for short.
And oh, now I get it.
Yeah. So we treat women's sexual needs, and it started out as really focusing on libido, arousal, orgasm, and sexual pain. But we very quickly learned that there's a lot of missing aspects of women's needs that are not being appropriately met, whether it's from lack of training from healthcare providers or they just simply don't have time. So a lot of my colleagues, like my urologist colleagues, they're surgeons, my gynecology colleagues, they're surgeons. They oftentimes, with the way that healthcare is going nowadays, they have 5 minutes to spend with patients. And a lot of these issues are not 5 minute consults. They take a lot longer. So over the years, we've developed a really great relationship with various healthcare providers in Middle Tennessee, as well as across the nation, to kind of better meet these needs for patients and just treat the subspecialty care. And we've expanded now. So we treat a lot of pelvic floor disorders, chronic pelvic pain, sexual pain, difficulty achieving orgasm, vaginal dryness, lack of sex drive. Gosh, the list goes on and on. And then that even expanded into treating hormonal issues and treating other urologic concerns. So really, we jokingly say that this is like the land of lost toys. We kind of treat the things that are missed and that people don't have time or don't want to deal with. And that's really our passion and why we focus so so much on these needs, because really women are not getting the care that they need. So basically, in summary, we try to focus on the areas that women are not receiving appropriate care for whatever reason. And it's truly our passion. So we're not just there to make a buck. And really, sex medicine is not a big lucrative practice. It's really to provide the services that women need and deserve.
It's such a taboo topic to talk about. And I will give you a really great example of that. I was on a PBS shoot in Los Angeles, and the makeup woman was doing my makeup and the stylist was over just making sure everything was steamed and ready to go. I don't know how we got on the conversation of sex hurting. She's got a boyfriend with a larger penis. I'm just so glad that this is my podcast and you're on it and I can just talk about whatever the hell I want. Yeah. But he had a larger, you know what? And she, I don't know how that came up in conversation, but she was new to dating. She was Christian, religious. She was very afraid of approaching the conversation with him about having a big dick. Mm-hmm. And I just said, you know, there's things that are out there. There are these lasers, there's the Mona Lisa. And I don't even know what I'm talking about, but it opened up the conversation that sex hurts for me too. And she just looked at me like she saw a ghost. Like, what do you mean sex hurts for you? And I just said, oh yeah, it always has. To the extent of, and I'm just going to be so raw with so many of you out there, because it's important if the women are hearing this, and it's important that the dudes hear this, because you got to know, like, sometimes you think you're not living up to standards, or you're not performing, or there's something wrong with you guys, when I'm in the bathroom literally cracking open a bottle of lidocaine, acting like I need to just be gone for a second, and I'm literally numbing out the entire edge and area of my, and we want to get into this, vagina, vulva, and clitoris. I don't know the difference between the two. I'm going to ask you, because if I don't know the difference between a vulva and a clitoris, then I doubt 100% of the guys out there, I'm sure 100% of the guys out there do not. But I'm just saying, in order for me to even have sex, I have to completely numb out what I'm doing and then just close my eyes and hope that it's over and enjoy the intimate connection that I'm getting with my partner, because it sure as hell isn't sex. It burns, it hurts, but we are on our way with the Wish Clinic on rectifying that, because I plan on having sex and having it be really great. That's probably a little bit of TMI, but this conversation is so important, because like I just said, I'm not going to tell a guy that it hurts for me to do it, okay? I'm just going to plunge through it. And that is what every gynecologist, and we're talking about really prominent institutions that I've been to, specialists that I've seen, Dr. Fott, and all they've just said is just lube up, girl, lay on back and take it like a man, basically. Mm-hmm. And that sucks. So before we get into, you named four things, like the four main things that your clinic treats women for, all the way from sex drive, libido, to pain during sex. And then there was a couple other things. I want to touch on all of those, but I do want to hear, like, what is the difference between a vulva and a clitoris? Because when I looked up vulva, is it vulva? That's how you say it, right?
Yeah.
You say it.
Vulva.
Vulva.
Yes, correct. Good job.
You have vulva socks that I've seen.
I do have vulvas. I have a lot of vulva various objects in my house, and I have three daughters, so there's a lot of vulvas and vaginas running around my house too. But the vulva is anything that's outside, or like at the opening leading to the outside of the body, whereas the vagina is the vaginal canal. It leads up inside. The clitoris is a component of the vulva. So if you think about the vulva, hopefully you can see my hands here.
Wait.
The clitoris sits at the top.
Say it now again. We have a clear screen, Dr. Fott. Right. Go ahead.
So if you think about the vulva, and I know this is kind of a crude example here to use in my hands, but anything within, up inside the vagina or up inside the body is the vagina. Anything around the outside, which includes the labia minora, the smaller labia, the larger hair-bearing labia majora, the clitoris, which is not just that tiny little tip. And I think this is a really, really important piece, especially for men and partners of females to understand, is the clitoris is actually about 8 inches long. If we were to extract it from the body and lay it end to end, it's quite pronounced. And it's erectile tissue, just like the penis.
Is that what I saw, asking for a friend that might have been on a porn site? Uh-huh. I saw like enlarged clitorises that look like penises. I'm not dissing. It freaked me out. What is that?
That's different. Okay. So that's called clitoromegaly. That's a whole different condition. Okay. Yeah.
Back to my clear explanation.
Yeah. So that's the glands of the clitoris. It's like the tip of the penis. So if you think about for men, you know what the tip of the penis feels like. It's highly, highly sensitive. It's the same thing for the clitoris. Hence why during sexual activity, hitting it hard or direct, really intense stimulation is oftentimes too much. It's not super pleasurable. But indirect touch and massage of that area, as well as surrounding areas that can help to stimulate and engorge blood into that region, can be highly arousing. The clitoris has lobes. So for instance, it sits like this around the vaginal opening, but the lobes go deep inside the vagina. And so you don't see them, but during sexual activity, that becomes engorged with blood and swells. And that's where the theoretical G-spot comes from. It's not this magical, wondrous area full of unicorns and roses. It's really, and it's not a bunch of extra nerve endings either, which was another theory from medical scientists in years past. It's really that you can stimulate the clitoris from the inside of the vagina.
But again, asking for a friend, it seems like in some cases, my friend, when it's hitting up into here, or it's grinding, that's where you experience a different kind of orgasm.
Yes.
Is it wrong to say that my friend has experienced two different types of orgasms, one from an external stimulation and another from inside, or is that my friend's imagination?
Well, orgasm is orgasm, but you can achieve it through different measures, and it can feel very, very different. So a lot of women, and every woman is different, so it's hard to really give a definitive answer on that. But a lot of women do say that deeper penetrative play that leads to orgasm is more difficult to obtain. However, it can be more intense and more pleasurable. But again, every woman is different, and every woman's pleasure centers are different. And it's not just the vagina and the clitoris that are arousing areas. The nipples, the nape of the neck, the ears, just like men, there's a lot of different erogenous areas. But and you can actually achieve orgasm even with non-genital contact. Some women can become orgasmic with just nipple play.
Wow. Really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
This seems like an appropriate time to talk about squirting, too. Everybody always wants to know about that.
What is it? What's the liquid?
Okay, so about 10% of women, on average, are capable of or regularly excrete some fluid during intense arousal or even orgasm, or even just some particular type of position. And what we believe it to be, it is very similar to urine, but there are some components to it that make us think that women may almost have a degree of a prostate gland or two little prostate glands on either side of the urethra. So during stimulation, that can excrete some fluid, just like ejaculate in men. It's not anything to be worried about as long as it's not, you know, bothersome, odorous, burning, anything like that.
What about when you see a squirting? I mean, I'm in a rock band and I'm a pro wrestler. I've seen stuff. So anyway, when you've seen squirting, it seems like it is only produced by deep penetration of the hand and very quick action. That doesn't seem like that's natural to me. It seems like it's forced. And are people causing damage to their internal sex organs when they're doing that? Since, like I said, when I've seen that done before, it is very, very forced, very prominent, very almost violent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can understand that. So there's two components to that question. And no, a lot of women that regularly experience female ejaculation is the more medical term. You know, it can be just from, you know, external clitoral play, just very gentle clitoral play, but they just happen to have a really pronounced experience with their orgasm. Now, the second component of that is, you know, does really aggressive sex play, can that lead to trauma? Well, sure. It's just like, you know, men can experience a broken penis. That's a real thing. If during hardcore penetrative play, that let's say a female partner comes down on top of that penis, the penis can actually break. And we see that in our urology practice quite
what?
A bit.
Mm-hmm. Yep. What does a broken penis look like? Wait, I think I've dated a guy. I do. Maybe that was a penis pump.
And oftentimes that can lead to Peyronie's disease, which is just a constant curvature of the penis. It's not usually painful. It can be. But it's, you know, a lot of men are embarrassed by it or they're uncomfortable by it. Oftentimes the pain is experienced from the female partner. Because if a male is, depending upon the left or right, up and down type of curvature, that can hit certain sensitive areas inside the vagina and kind of rub and irritate. So in that case, there are treatment options available.
Before we get to our four things that I wanted to hit on, what are some things that the men out there would really find value in knowing about with the education, with the history, with all of the experience and cases that you've seen? What's something that men don't like to talk about, but their partners come in and say X, Y, and Z?
Yeah. Number one, women do not respond in the same way sexually. So it oftentimes takes at least 15 minutes of direct clitoral stimulation or genital stimulation of erogenous areas for a woman to have the potential for orgasm. And that doesn't mean that they don't like them, they're not attracted to them, or that it's not a pleasurable experience if they either take longer to experience orgasm or they don't experience orgasm. Many women feel sexual pleasure without orgasm during sexual activity. No, other women are really bothered by that. But oftentimes it's difficult for men to understand women's bodies and for women to understand men's bodies because we are so radically different. women oftentimes don't have spontaneous sex drive. It doesn't just happen out of nowhere. It's possible, and some women do report that. But for the most part, women are more receptive creatures. So that means that sexual stimuli have to be available. And that can be as simple as, you know, a compliment or seeing something on TV or watching porn, or could be more physical, like a sensual touch that causes the brain to go, oh, that feels good. The body responds with blood flow down into the genitals and other areas of the body, which then triggers the brain to become aware of that. That's where the desire comes from. So all of this stuff has to happen in order for us to desire sex. Whereas for men, it's a spontaneous thing. And men oftentimes in my practice, now I'm not a sex therapist, but I do see a lot of couples in my practice when, let's say a heterosexual couple comes in and the male partner has quite a few questions. What I tend to hear is, you know, she doesn't love me anymore. She's not attracted to me anymore. And it's not so much that, it's just that she's lost that ability to have responsive desire. And there are treatment options available for that. So I encourage that, but it's not necessarily reflective on the male partner or the sexual encounters. Oftentimes it's across the board. They're not able to become interested in sex on their own. And so sometimes it can be a chemical imbalance in the brain, or it could be lack of ability to achieve blood flow in the genitals, or it could be pain or a lot of other things.
That is such valuable information. And of course, I'm thinking about myself. And if I'm interested in a guy, I'm like a dude, like, boom, it's on. Like, mm-hmm. I swear to God, I'm not boy crazy, but it's all like a connection with the guy. And then like, I don't need any 15 minutes. I'm ready to go, you know, mm-hmm. Fortunately, or unfortunately, it's hurt so bad in the past that I've got to like figure out ways around that. But fortunately, I found you and your clinic and your team of experts. And I'm really looking forward to testing that out. Just kidding. You had mentioned four things that the Wish Clinic, basically there's four top things that mm-hmm. people come in to treat. And we just sort of covered like the female libido. What's another main thing that people would come to see you for?
Yeah. So let's say somebody or a female patient comes in and they have dryness. They just can't become aroused and
huge.
Yeah. And that's women of all ages. A lot of times women think that this is just something in older women. But I see women sometimes as young as 18 years old that are bothered by this. And there's a lot of possible causes for it. And if you think about it, if we can't become aroused as women, and going back to what you mentioned, Goldie, is you mentioned how it's on when you have somebody that you're attracted to. What may be happening is this very quick response where you see that person or you think about that person, your body reacts, and then it triggers your brain to go, yes, I want to do this. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. But the thing is like, it doesn't happen unless mm-hmm. like all the stimulation in bed, all that foreplay, that's awesome. But if I am not connected mentally with bro, it ain't. It's like literally I'm looking at the ceiling, counting those little pebble bubbles on the ceiling, trying to figure out how many are on there while he's doing his business. And let's get done. Get out of my bed and I need to go make me a sandwich. You know what I'm saying? So it's like I have to be connected to that guy. And I don't think that's like that for men. Maybe it is. Like, I do know some friends who are, when they are into a woman, she walks on water and do no wrong. And like, they're just ready to go 24/7. We'll get into that in a minute. Just your psychological and your emotional connection to things. But back before we were just talking about something before I went on a rant about, go ahead, what you were saying about dryness.
Self-sidetracked, but
no, dryness is so important, and that's going to lead to another thing. Finish your topic, and then we're going to talk about why the birth control pill has hindered me in so many ways for all these years, and I had no idea about it. So finish up the dryness, what you were saying.
Yeah. And so when we think about women being responsive creatures, women require blood flow, which then oftentimes does trigger lubrication for comfortable and enjoyable sex. When that doesn't happen, then it can lead to pain. It can lead to lack of sensation that prohibits that spontaneous desire that occurs after arousal happens. So all that being said, women of all ages can experience this. Younger women with vaginal dryness, the first thing I ask, as you mentioned, Goldie, was about birth control pill usage. One of the most common causes of younger women, so women before menopause, of childbearing years, experiencing vaginal dryness is birth control pill usage. And believe it or not, you think about taking a hormone pill, a birth control pill, It should be giving you hormones, but what it's actually doing is suppressing down the woman's own natural estrogen and testosterone. And it's only giving back this very, very tiny amount. So if I were to, assess blood levels, her natural levels would be in a postmenopausal range. Now they're getting a tiny bit back from that hormone, which we can't test necessarily. However, it's oftentimes in some women not enough to maintain that tissue integrity of the vulva and the vagina and the clitoris. And so what happens is the tissue becomes really thin and dry. And instead of the vagina being really stretchy and elastic, it becomes inelastic and dry. We notice, we call it loss of architecture of the vulva. So the clitoris literally will recede. You were talking, Goldie, about enlarged clitorises. In this case, oftentimes the clitoris will recede, which results in even further decreased pleasure and decreased sensation. The labia recede and almost look like a prepubescent woman or a prepubescent baby. And the same thing happens during menopause. So believe it or not, birth control pill usage can mimic the same thing that happens with menopausal women. And it, again, it can be quite painful, but it's usually a fairly simplistic approach where we try to find an alternative option for contraceptive products. And then, because obviously we don't want patients to get pregnant that don't want that. And then we can sometimes expedite or speed up the process by using medications to kind of enhance hormones in the vulva and the vagina. That's not always necessary. It sometimes takes a few months, but will rectify itself usually after a period of time.
Amazing. And then, keep going.
Well, the other thing that is very common in younger women is women that are breastfeeding. So after having a baby, when we nurse, that shuts down our hormones just like birth control pills. And oftentimes, especially for women that breastfeed for a long period of time, that can lead to a lot of these changes that I mentioned earlier. Then menopause hits, and unfortunately, that can cause the same thing. And in that scenario, oftentimes we turn to lubricants and moisturizers. And one quick thing about that, moisturizers are really, has really small molecules that absorbs into skin, whereas a lubricant has larger molecules that sits on top of skin and provides comfortable, prevents friction against two skin surfaces. So for women that are experiencing dryness, well, these products are more of like a Band-Aid. They're not necessarily fixing the underlying issue. They can be quite helpful while you're going through your therapy. But a moisturizer or an oil, something like that, is really great for foreplay. And then a lubricant is best at the point of penetration to make comfortable penetration happen, whether it's with a penis or a toy or whatnot.
Are you guys listening to this? I hope these guys are listening to this. Brand members, I hope that you are listening to this and you're taking notes, mental notes. You're writing things down and you're figuring this out. Like, there is just so much more to this. Now, I have to interject really quickly and say that I have never been told about birth control doing damage to me. I was on it at 16 years old because I had very painful menstrual cycles and I debilitating, knocked me down, had to stay home from school once a month on period Wednesday is what we called it. And the doctor said, let's do birth control, not because I wanted to be sexually active at 16, which was important for my Catholic mother to know, but to regulate my cycle and to not have the extreme pain every time that month. Like I said, I couldn't even stand up. It was so bad. So that's why I was put on it. But there was never any future warning or education that, hey, this is only for maybe a short amount of time. And then you want to fast forward to a few years later, wink, wink, when we've discontinued the birth control for me and done an IUD, which I thought an IUD looked like a small tooth retainer, which it doesn't. When I heard IUD, I guess maybe they used to look like retainers or something, but now it was a very simple, painful, but simple procedure, which you sent me to an expert, and I'm so glad because she knocked it out of the park, and I was terrified, but I'm in wrestling, so I have to just go in there and act like I'm not, but I wanted to rip my skin off because it's not comfortable to have done, but she also prescribed me some sorcerer's cream. I don't know what's in this cream. I think it's got some hormones in it, or it's got two different things. And I know it had to be custom made. But I will say I think it's only been 2 or 3 weeks since I've been using it and discontinued the pill. And even though I'm not sexually active right now, but I can tell with other things that I do that it's already making a difference. And it blows my mind that all of these years of spending thousands of dollars in this field and going to, like I said, really renowned clinics trying to rectify this situation. Why, for the love of God, Dr. Fott, would none of those professionals, doctors, nurse practitioners, nurses, why would none of them have known to discontinue birth control? That's what I wanted to have you on this show. I mean, I'm not trying to be pessimistic, but that freaking pisses me off.
Yeah. And really, it's not to the fault of anybody that you've seen in the past. And as long as they were kind about it, it's lack of education. You would be shocked how little sexual health education is included in medical training. So I'm involved at the Vanderbilt University School of Medicine and Schools of Nursing to kind of implement some of this content into their medical training so that when they do graduate, they have a baseline understanding. Even if they're not experts, they say, oh yeah, I remember that. I've learned about that. I know this exists.
And exactly.
Look and find an expert.
That's one thing. Like if you don't know, or if somebody keeps coming with a chronic thing, like, you know, I don't know about certain things. I do photography. And if I don't know about it, I research it. Or if somebody comes up and says, I don't like this or I don't like that, because I don't even consider myself to be a professional photographer, even though I am. I guess I don't consider myself that because I wear so many other hats and it's not my full time. But even as my part time or a side hustle or something that I just do, you know, once, a couple times a month, whatever, I still feel responsible to educate myself further on it. And if you are a female gynecologist, like, I just I appreciate you sticking up for them, and I agree with you, but it still bums me out when I'm like, look, I'm in massive pain here. Isn't there anything that can be done? And it is very dismissed, even from a woman to a woman. So I'm very glad that you're out there teaching. And you did say in the beginning of the podcast, you did a shout out to another woman, and you both created Wish. Like, who created Wish?
Oh, Susan Kellogg is in Philadelphia. She was my mentor when I first started Wish.
You started Wish?
Yes, back in 2005. So we've been around for 15 years. And I hear this all the time. I didn't know you existed. I didn't know that this was an area of healthcare. And, you know, going back to the lack of education, I can count on, you know, maybe, I was going to say on two hands, but maybe a little bit more, the number of sex medicine experts in the nation. There's not many. There's very, very few people that take an interest in this and do fellowships and get trained in it. But Susan Kellogg was one of the first. She's still practicing out in Philadelphia. She started her own practice, and I kind of brought that content back. What was interesting is taking that content back to Nashville, I had to completely change how I spoke with my patients and the content that we addressed and
why,
how I delivered that to my patients, because speaking to patients in Philadelphia is quite different to speaking to patients in Nashville.
You said you can't say the same things on what, television, on air, on radio, on broadcast. What can you say of the male equivalent, and what can you not say of the female equivalent?
Yeah, I have to say this is really refreshing to be able to speak openly and not have to constantly think, okay, don't say that, don't say that. I've been on many interviews for TV and radio and various media outlets, and I'm oftentimes told you can't say this, you can't say this. And just very common medical terms like vagina and vulva and orgasm and, you know, even sex. Sometimes I can't even say sex. It's just, it's really, really crazy.
How are you supposed to get to the bottom of something if you can't even use the clinical, the terminology, what's the word I'm looking for? God bless it. Say it again.
Terminology.
The correct terminology of the word.
Yeah. No, it's very difficult. And it's also, you know, we as women, we already have the stigma associated with our sexuality and our genitals. And so to not even be able to use those words, like I'm very strongly feel that women should use the proper terms to talk about their anatomy, because, you know, number one, if you can't explain where your pain is, if you can't explain, you know, what your symptoms are or where they're located, how can the healthcare provider help you, you know? And it's a social thing, you know, in society nowadays, we as women are taught to not touch down there, to not look down there, to it's dirty, that sort of thing. Whereas for men, it's glorified, you know, your penis is like your crown. And it's such a gender bias. And it's really, really frustrating. But yeah, I mean, I've taken a log of the different terms that I've learned of what patients have been told to name their genitals. It's quite comedic. Yeah.
What? Like what?
Oh, like clitoris is man in the boat and my kitten and my, I mean, oh, it's just, it's so funny. And it makes me laugh. But at the same time, I try to educate my patients and say, okay, well, what I think you're referring to, and I'll get a mirror out if they're comfortable and show them anatomy, because you can look at porn and you can look at Playboy or Hustler or whatever, but oftentimes there's airbrushing that's happened, or women have had plastic surgery to modify their appearance. So every woman looks radically different. And there are two books that I love to keep in my practice. One is called Petals and one is called Femalia, F-E-M-A-L-I-A. And they're simply just books of vulvas. I guess it's technically pornography, but it's more of an artistic expression and an educational tool to help show women that, look, every woman looks different. Sometimes labia are longer, sometimes they're shorter, sometimes they're bigger. Sometimes you can't really see the clitoris and you have to pull the hood back like an uncircumcised penis. So I think it's really important to empower women to say, listen, these are the terms for your anatomy. It's okay to say them. And that's really a big push is in my interviews. I'm slowly starting to see some changes over time with being able to use proper terminology to educate. But it's definitely, we're still very, very far behind men. You look on TV and you can't get past a Viagra commercial or, you know, something with regard to men's genitals or men's sexual health, men's urology. But unfortunately, you never, ever see that for women.
And I never do. That's why I'm so fascinated. And I really do. We got to respect your time. We'll go a little bit longer just to answer a few more questions. But I would be so honored if you would come on again in the future with a specific topic or something to cover. And it would be really great if people had specific questions that they could write in. And just if you care anything about just spreading the word. Yes, I said that. spreading the word for sexual wellness, for sexual health and awareness. And it is like growing up a Catholic girl, everything was dirty and not talked about. And you were made to feel guilty about so many things. And I feel sad for the people in the Muslim communities where I do public speaking, motivational speaking to kids, third, fourth, fifth, sixth grade. And Dr. Fott, there's little girls that will come and just cling on to me and they're terrified because they're 12 or 13 years old and they're going to be circumcised at that age the following weekend. And it's just like, this is off topic, but like my heart just sinks and it goes out. And I just think, when, for the love of God, are we going to get up to speed with everything? And I mean, at the end of the day, everybody wants to get laid and everybody wants to feel good and be loved and love. Yeah. And we go backwards and regress all the time by not even identifying, like you said, your anatomy with the proper terminology. And that's not cool and not fair. And maybe some people that are listening to this can hear this as not just such a dirty, you know, go jerk off or whatever you guys do listening to podcasts. You know, maybe this will sink in a little bit and you'll understand that there is so much more under the hood than you've ever been exposed to, taught to know, whatever. So you said the dryness. We've touched on that, and the libido. How do you treat for libido? Like what? Because I mean, in my mind, you would just kick somebody some more hormones or something like that. But that's not it. Like, what do you do to treat a woman's libido? Because you said when you were talking about, you know, that she's just not into it anymore, and it's not the guy, or it's not her partner. Like, it's something chemical or imbalanced, and there's ways of treating that. Like, what do you tell? Let's pretend like I have no libido at all, and how would you treat me?
Yeah. Well, number one, we're going to assess the factors associated with loss of sex drive. Number one, are you in a relationship? Is this bothersome? When did this all begin? Any other factors that you think might be related to your low libido? And sometimes it is as simple as like, yeah, you know, I really don't like my partner, or I have pain or something. And then we go on track with dealing with that. But if I'm asking questions and really I can't find any obvious source, let's say a woman's in a relationship, she really loves her partner, she's really attracted, she wants to have sex, she just doesn't have it. And there's nothing, no recent medication changes or health conditions that would explain her loss of sex drive. In that case, we're going to talk through a couple of different options. If she's premenopausal, so before menopause, we have two FDA-approved options that are available to treat distressing low sex drive, which we call hypoactive sexual desire disorder, or HSDD. The first one is called ADDY, which is A-D-D-Y-I, and it's a pill that's taken every night at bedtime. And after about 2 months, it's not immediate, so it takes about 8 weeks or 2 months, women start to notice on average that that maybe they have more sexual dreams or thoughts. It doesn't make them over the top horny where they can't control themselves. we don't have that pill yet. And I don't think anybody would really bring that to market, but it just helps to bring back that what was lost. So it's not changing a woman's personality. It's just giving her back what she lost and what she desires again. Then there's another medication called Vyleesi, which is V-Y-L-E-E-S-I. And it's an on-demand injectable medicine that is administered into the abdomen or the upper thigh. It works within about 45 minutes and can last up to about 16 hours, depending upon the woman and her metabolism. So it's kind of the same concept as Viagra, where you have to plan ahead.
Oh, you do it yourself.
Uh-huh. Yep. And it works completely differently from Viagra. Both Vyleesi and ADDY work on the brain. They work on an increasing dopamine in the brain. Dopamine is really critical for sex drive.
Can you imagine a man taking a shot to get a hard on? I'm sorry. To get an erection? No.
They do.
For
erectile dysfunction, you know, if they're not responding to some of the traditional medications, there is an injection that can be administered directly into the penis, believe it or not.
I've never heard of this, and I don't think I know one man that would put a needle into his penis. Does this really happen?
We'll do.
Do men really do this?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. I feel like I need to bring one of my urologists on.
Where the penis?
Directly right into the shaft.
Oh, my God. I breathe on. Oh, my God. What?
Yep.
I can't even. Guys do that?
It's not the preferred first line. It can be quite effective for men. The one I'm talking about for women is super easy. It's tiny, tiny. It's kind of like an EpiPen, and you don't even feel it. Then it goes in.
Is the guy's one?
It's a little bigger. It's definitely a little bigger.
God Almighty! I would pass out if I had. If I had a penis, which some people think I do, I would pass out if I had to do that. Okay, keep going.
Yep.
This is amazing. This is amazing.
And then women after menopause, a lot of people, you mentioned hormones. So a lot of people think that, you know, testosterone is this key player for libido, and it can be, but the research really shows that testosterone replacement is most effective in women after menopause. That doesn't mean that we won't consider using it in some younger women, depending upon their story. But in general, we tend to kind of lean more towards the FDA-approved options of ADDY or Vyleesi before we consider any hormonal approach. Now, that's considering that there's no other hormonal influence, for instance, birth control pills, which you and I have talked about the impact of birth control pills on pain, but birth control pills also completely kill sex drive. So that's one of the biggest things that we oftentimes will
do.
And women that tell me they have no other issues, they just have a low desire.
Because of birth control pills?
Absolutely. Yep. It suppresses testosterone down, and it's kind of complicated, so I won't get into it too much, but it completely suppresses testosterone in younger women.
Wow. And you need testosterone to get it?
Not necessarily. You don't have to have testosterone, but it does drive sexuality for both men and women. More so in men, of course, but it is, it's an important factor. And that's why a lot of women, honestly, about 90% of women don't have an issue with birth control, but there's a select group of 10% of women that do. And we think there's genetic influence where some women are more susceptible to this. It's not yet concrete knowledge, so we can't get into it too deep, but we do think that some women have more of a tendency for having problems with birth control pills.
Before we get into the last area that I wanted to talk about, I just want to hear one more time for my own sound bites. What are some of the words that you are not allowed to say on other podcasts?
Vulva, vagina, clitoris, sex, genitals, female sexuality, squirting. Oh gosh, the list goes on and on.
Well, we are glad at the brand and the Realm Network. Let me say that again. We are very glad as brand members on Vince Russo's brand and on the Realm Network to allow you to say whatever you need to say. There is a huge, huge audience of men, obviously, that are tuning in and listening to this. And we thank you for, if you've gotten this far in the podcast, listening to all of this lady talk. Let's think of just a few nuggets before we let you go and respect your time, Dr. Fott. Just a few nuggets in your professional history, just everything that you've seen, your knowledge, your education. What are some things that would help the male population listening today, like something that might be an aha moment for them or something that you can tell them about, enlighten them, educate them, that they would know the right questions to ask when they go see, is it a urologist or do they have a wish clinic for men? Like, what do guys have that are the equivalent to all of these wonderful things that you're enlightening me on that I never knew about until a couple months ago?
Yeah. Well, number one, I think anybody, male or female or anybody, I think that is experiencing sexual complaints, just like you did, talk about it. You can talk to friends. You can talk to family members if you feel comfortable and safe doing that. Because opening up the topic of conversation, you would be shocked how many people experience these same issues. Like, for instance, women, about 43% of women experience sexual complaints, but it's so under acknowledged and not talked about that we don't think it exists. But yeah, talking about it, and it, in general, a urologist tends to be the best person to talk about male sexual issues, but it doesn't necessarily mean that's the only person. If you don't have a urologist or you don't have anybody near you, if you have a healthcare provider that you feel comfortable talking about with these issues, usually they can at least acknowledge the existence of your concerns and hopefully help to find somebody for you. There's a few different organizations you can go to, like ISWISH, which is the International Society for the Study of Women's Sexual Health. There's a lot of other various organizations available for men too, but if you have a female partner, that organization has a Find the Provider link. It's ISWISH.org, ISSWSH.org. It's a medical organization international, so wherever you are in the world, you can hopefully land on somebody that's involved in sex medicine. And you know, just being sensitive, if you're a male that has a female partner, just being sensitive and listening and try not to take it personally. It can be very, very difficult because oftentimes men take this personally in the sense that they feel that they're not attractive and they're not wanted, they're not loved. So in turn, then they take away intimacy from the female, which even if a woman doesn't necessarily desire sex, they still oftentimes want intimacy and love. And so when that goes away, then it just completely kills the relationship. So I think that just if you're listening to this and you have a female partner and these are concerns that you're experiencing within your relationship, talk about it and talk to anybody. And if you don't get the answers that you want, keep talking. Go to somebody else because there are answers available. And I'm even happy to connect people if they have a specific area that they want me to look in.
Oh, you're too wonderful. What about erectile dysfunction? I mean, what does cause that? And I wish that we did have more time because the next time around, I want to talk about sex issues of every age. But, you know, what exactly is erectile dysfunction for people that are listening? It shouldn't be something that's scary, right? That's something that is worldwide treated and you don't have to take a needle through your hole of your penis. Oh, God, I'm still shuddering from that.
Oh. Just to clarify, it's not through the urethra at the opening. It's into the shaft of the
body. I thought it was right down, shooting down the banana. And that's where I was just freaking out thinking about that. I mean, I appreciate the male penis. So that terrified me. I'm glad that you made that. I'm glad that you made that clarification. All right. So they would be putting this into the shaft while it's still kind of soft and just kind of a quick. Yeah. Okay. Okay. That I was just like. I was imagining like this big needle, like just cocked an arm, just going on down for the kill. And that just freaked me. Okay, yeah. Good. So it doesn't have to be scary.
But no, it's not something that has to be scary. Now, there are possible causes of erectile dysfunction that can be more serious. So I don't want to make it sound like it's not a big deal because oftentimes men with diabetes will have erectile dysfunction. Men with neuropathy, where the nerves aren't working appropriately. Men with
Got a bookmark. We're gonna talk. You're gonna give me the two again. Uh-huh. I gotta go back to this. Brand members, people that are listening to this, look, this with anything in the world is so important that when you start having symptoms and something is going wrong with you, that you get on it, get off your ass and go figure it out, because it very, very much so could be an indication of diabetes or of another condition or a pre-existing disease or one that's coming on. And you can't just brush stuff under the rug or say, because I've had so many guys say, I'm not in the mood or this or that, and then it's leading to something way bigger. You guys, grow a pair literally and go get checked out. That is so important. And especially, I know a lot of you guys out there, you are not the healthiest creatures with your health and fitness and wellness, and the crap that you're eating is going to lead to bad stuff. I'm on you. I'm telling you, I'm calling you out. Quit posting all your pictures of your sugary shit and your desserts and all of your crap, because that ain't making me hot and heavy. It makes me, my heart hurt for you. You know who I'm talking about. You know who it is. Start looking at these symptoms of you can't, because it's, I think it starts like gradually, doesn't it? Where you just can't get an erection. It's not like you're going hot and heavy and then just one day you wake up and you can't anymore. From my experience with my partners, it seems like it's something that gradually starts coming on. You guys, go get checked out. Okay, back to what you were saying. It could be diabetes. It could be, there was, what was the next disease?
Yeah, any type of neuropathy. And that can be, you know, diabetes sometimes leads to neuropathy, which means abnormal nerve functioning.
Oh.
Also be, you mentioned, you know, this tends to be a gradual thing with slow onset where maybe I can't maintain an erection, or maybe not, it's not as hard as it used to be, or now I can't get an erection at all. And then there are cases where if there's spinal cord trauma, where a man literally after the trauma cannot get an erection because of, you know, obviously that's impacting the nerves that lead down to that region. But if you think about anything that impacts blood flow, so cardiovascular disease, men that smoke, men that have high cholesterol levels, men that have had a history of a heart attack, all of those are possible contributing causes or correlates of experiencing erectile dysfunction. So erectile dysfunction, while it may seem embarrassing to address, it's not to a urologist. They do it all day, every day. It's just one patient after another that they talk to about these issues. And they're very comfortable with it. They have lots of treatment options available. And there's a set protocol for working things up. So working up, checking some blood work, and getting just like overall health assessment to rule out some of these more concerning causes. And you know, number one, if they identify that there's something more concerning, you have a win there because you've caught something hopefully early. You can address it and deal with it. If there's nothing else that really explains, like no specific health conditions or medications or whatnot, then we go down the path of trying medications. And Viagra, Cialis, Levitra, all of those types of medications are called PDE5 inhibitors. And they work by enhancing blood flow into the genitals. If you've tried one of those, go back, because sometimes one will work, whereas others won't. There's also lots of other options. We were kind of joking about the injection in the penis. That's just one additional option. There's lots and lots of approaches to treat this condition. And I'm going to just put this out there that I'm not an expert. I don't treat men in my office, but I have, you know, tens of urologists that I work with that do this all day, every day, and they're phenomenal.
If you could wave your wand and wave it to fix problems with sexual wellness. You did say one thing about just being more open about talking about it. What do you think would really, and this is a very abstract question, Dr. Fott, but like, what would really contribute to couples having better sex?
Yeah. Equal the playing field. With awareness. And again, this is, you know, there's such that gender bias out there with regard to talking about and addressing and even research. There's so little research. Back in the day, back in the 40s, 50s, 60s, research on sexual health in humans was only performed on men. And the results were then generalized to women, and women were assumed to perform just like men. And so that, not only are we lacking specific research on women, but it held us back, because all the future research went on the fact that, oh, well, women are just like men, so we must assume that this means this. So that's one piece of it, is increasing research, increasing patients talking, or not patients, but people in general talking about sex, being able to talk about our body parts. This is a fundamental human right, no matter what your gender. And just like you were saying, everybody wants to be loved and touched. And, you know, for the most part, most people want to be able to have healthy, enjoyable, comfortable sexual functioning, whatever that may mean to them. And there's no reason that we shouldn't talk about it. There's no reason that we shouldn't be educated about it. And we should have equal understanding and treatment options available for both men and women.
You know what? I was just thinking of as you said that, and I think this is not talked about, and I haven't heard anybody say this before, so I'm very excited to say it. But I think that a lot of reasons women don't talk about everything that I've just talked about is because they're afraid people are going to think they're a hoe. And let me just tell you, everybody, I ain't no hoe, okay? Like, I can count on my whatever, one finger, like the partners I've had over the last how many years. I know I'm not a hoe, but if you talk about this stuff, it doesn't mean that you are. It doesn't mean that there's something wrong with you if you're not married, because I'm just going to speak again, being very transparent. I was always taught that you are supposed to be married before you enter into sex. And I'm sorry, Dad, Mom, God rest your soul, but I'm sorry, Dad, that ain't happening. Like I said, I don't even know if I will get married in the future, whatever. That's another topic. I'm just saying, there is no reason why I can't openly discuss things. And maybe if you were to ask me the same question, it would be that people in general, whether we're talking about eggs, bacon, or sexual health, are less judgmental. Because at the end of the day, like, for the love of God, would you just let people be happy? There would be less problems in the world. There would be less shootings of school. We wouldn't even be talking about gun control or throwing around politics or left to right or Democrat or Republican. All of that would kind of just be suppressed if we could have a little bit more kindness in the world and less judgmental. And I never understood. I would giggle and I would laugh as a child when I saw somebody going down the wedding the aisle and getting married and everybody was crying around them. And I was like, what the hell are these people's problems? Like, I would laugh. And like, now as a wedding photographer on the side, I have a hard time even shooting weddings because I am so moved that, for the love of God, again, two people can stand each other for more than 5 minutes in the same room. It's like the biggest miracle I've ever seen. So, and I do a lot of LGBTQ weddings, and that, because that pool is even, you know, like, I talk to my gay friends and they're like, yeah, I'm on another dating app. It's the same old queers as the, you know, was 10 years ago. It's just the pool is so, so when I see them getting together, I'm like, oh my God, how can anyone ever judge two other human beings that they've found something that they want to make a commitment for? It's amazing. And if I were to answer the question back, it would just be less judgmental. If you're doing what Dr. Fott said and you're approaching somebody, they are being vulnerable with you. They are being transparent. They're putting their heart and everything on the line to ask you a question or nudge you or say, hey, Bob, you know, is it hard for you to get it up too? You know, like, be as kind as possible. Listen, be still, take a moment. I hope from all this coronavirus that we are learning a skill set of shutting the up and listening to people and spending time and being aware of what our surroundings are and how close we are. Just because we're 6 feet apart right now, Dr. Fott, doesn't mean when this is all over that we can't learn something from that. Like, how hard that was to be. I'm a hugger at the grocery store, at the bank. I can't even go to those places to hug, and I'm feeling a withdrawal of human contact. And I hope to God that the entire world learns something from this mandatory pause and exercise. And that is, again, be kind and be less judgmental. So, great conversation today. Goldie's Closet, episode 58. I say it every time. I can't believe that you all tune in and you listen and you screenshot watching at home. I appreciate you. Dr. Fott appreciates you. The Wish Clinic. Let's hear just a quick few plugs to everything that you're doing. Do you have any books that you're writing, that you've written? Just give us the Dr. Fott ending, the fanfare of what we can do to support you. What's your call to action?
Oh, I appreciate that. No, I can't write a book. I'd end up in prison, unfortunately. I'd lose my license, probably my family too. But
oh my.
I do appreciate it. No, it really is. My mission and my passion is just really expanding the knowledge and awareness of sexual health in general, but also women's sexual health. I also have a great passion for sexuality in the disabled population, because physical cognitive disabilities should not preclude a human from having intimacy at all. Just kind of being that person out there. But yeah, my organizations, if you're thinking about healthcare, if you're involved in healthcare or you want your healthcare provider to get involved, I mentioned ISWISH. If you see a nurse practitioner, the National Association of Nurse Practitioners and Women's Health, which is NPWH, is a great organization. You can reach my practice, the Women's Institute for Sexual Health.
Is that only in Nashville?
It is only in Nashville. Okay. But we do have a national presence, and we're considered a center of excellence. Our phone number is 615-250-9265. We also have all social media, Instagram, Facebook, all of that. And you can email us, go to our website, wishnashville.com, or, just send us a message. And if you, as I mentioned to you, Goldie, if somebody is really struggling and having a hard time connecting or finding somebody in their area, I can't promise anything, but I'm more than happy to do a little legwork and check some of my organizations and see if we can find somebody to help them.
Ladies and gentlemen, put your hands together for not only our incredibly talented and educated Dr. Fott, but she's easy on the eyes too. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
You got to clap too for yourself. Hey, everybody, it's your girl, Goldilocks, and we are inside Goldie's Closet. And I want to ask a favor of you all, whether you watch the show or not, if you come to our band shows, what have you, it's something that you can do to support, and it costs nothing and no time at all. If you shop on a very popular online website, I would really appreciate it if you would bookmark some of the items that you are shopping for. And if you could just simply do this, go to goldieknows.blogspot.com. If you go over to the right, all the way to the bottom, the About Me section, there's a link. It just says I'm an Amazon affiliate. If you click on that, it takes you inside my umbrella, and everything that you order, I can earn just some help and support to keep all of this going, to keep the band going. We've got a hefty vehicle repair. It's pretty substantial. So it would be really great if you could remember my link. We get some support. It's that simple. I love you all. Thank you for making the time to stop by and check out everything that we're doing. Mwah.